You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicap. Welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 26th. I am Sam Saratella-Smith from Drake University. Here is our first story. TS Bank's REV program awards local businesses, by Emily Shoebe. TS Bank has announced that winners of its REV program, Viva Fit Kitchen and the Occasional Collective. REV is a program that gives small business owners and entrepreneurs the chance to win money to expand their business. TS Bank partnered with Advanced Southwest Iowa Corporation and other local companies to create the program. Viva Fit Kitchen, located on 1001 South 6th Street, was awarded the grand prize of $12,000. The business is a meal prep service and the only one in the region that provides nutritious, healthy, and authentic Mexican meals other than meals are provided as well. Thank you for believing in my dream and making the investment in my vision, said Alejandra Valdez, founder and owner of Viva Fit Kitchen, in the release. Impacting our community is so huge for us. This investment will help us in becoming more accessible to our community. Viva Fit Kitchen is ready to take it to the next level. Viva Fit Kitchen said that they plan to use the funds to help purchase two new fridges as well as cover some licensing and inventory costs. There are plans to place fridges in high traffic areas locally as well as with several large local employers, the release said. As they grow their vending machine locations, the plan is to open their own production kitchen and teach master classes on starting and growing other meal prep businesses. For more information about Viva Fit Kitchen, visit vivafitkitchen.com. The Occasional Collective was awarded $3,000 to help open a storefront that will sell thoughtfully curated, sustainably focused, and locally sourced goods, including unique, small-batch, handcrafted items, the release said. Having locally sourced goods helps with environmental impact and creates important economic opportunities for rural communities, the release said. The funds will be used to build out the storefront's exterior and interior, as well as to secure equipment and merchandise. The Occasional Collective currently sells items online at theoccasionalcollectivea.com and has plans for the grand opening next year. REV was started in 2015, and as of the year, the program has awarded more than $100,000 to local businesses and entrepreneurs. Our next story is Updates Made at Hitchcock Nature Center by Emil Shebe. Potawatomi Conservation has recently made updates at the Hitchcock Nature Center in Honey Creek to enhance visitor experience and protect the park's rare lowless soil and ecosystems. Due to higher traffic during the pandemic, the Nature Center noticed more wear and tear throughout the park, from infrastructure to the ecosystems that call the park home. Over the past 10 years, the park has seen a 500% increase in visitors, according to a press release. Lowest soil found at Hitchcock and along the western edge of Iowa was formed by glaciers and wind that blew dust and slit into the high dunes during the last ice age, which ended about 12,000 years ago, the release said. According to the release, the new updates include 40 new parking spaces near the Moonseed and Boardwalk trailheads and expanded overflow lot, as well as ADA-compliant parking near the Lowest Hills Lodge. Roads have been widened in several areas for safer two-way travel. The widened main park entrance now allows for two-way travel in and out of the park. There are now two main entrance lanes and a total of four entrance fee pay stations. Parking and roadway improvements help ensure visitors can more safely and efficiently experience the beauty of the Lowest Hills while protecting this landform that dates back to the last ice age and is found only two places in the world, the release said. Potawatomi Conservation said they knew that parking and road updates were necessary to continue to protect the park. As conservationists and public servants, it's our job to ensure that the public can experience the Lowest Hills in a way that balances the needs of our guests with the needs of this incredible nature resource, said Jeff Franco, Potawatomi Conservation Deputy Director, in the release. This project improves the safety and efficiency of our park while minimizing impacts on the land, creating a better visitor experience for our guests today, tomorrow, and for the generations to come. The Hitchcock Nature Center is located at 27792 Ski Hill Loop in Honey Creek. To learn more about Potawatomi conservation, visit potconservation.com. The next article is Senate hopeful Franken offers inventiveness. Democrat seeking nomination to challenge Grassley in 2022 by James Q. Lynch. Cedar Rapids. Retired Admiral Michael Franken thinks Iowans are looking for a U.S. senator with a sense of inventiveness. To turn progressive goals into policies that span myriad issues facing the nation, including the political divide that makes taking action seemingly impossible. One of the five candidates for Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate, the winner of which is expected to face Senator Chuck Grassley in 2022, Franken believes that it's necessary for the nominee and a future senator to see beyond the rhetoric to find ways to capitalize on the available possibilities. Using the infrastructure bill as an example, Franken sees a need to think differently about Iowa's resources. It presents an opportunity to upgrade commercial barge traffic on the Mississippi and Missouri rivers, Franken said. Ethanol could be used, as it is in Brazil, to help fuel turbines producing electricity to increase Iowa's resilience and sustainability. This isn't high science. This isn't fusion technology, he said during an interview last weekend before the Linn County Democratic Hall of Fame celebration. Using the available technology, Iowa could further improve its renewable energy portfolio while reducing its carbon footprint, he said. Franken, 63, finished second with 25% of the vote in the 2020 Democratic senatorial primary to face U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, which drew heavy national interest. He believes his chances for success are better this time because it appears the party will be sitting out the primaries, not having a thumb on the scale. Franken said it's up to voters to decide whether his experience from his early days on the Northwest Iowa farm through a military career that includes posts as a commander and a legislative affairs advisor to the late U.S. Senator Ted Kennedy and managing a business make him better prepared to serve as senator than the other candidates. But he said he has no doubt he is ready to step into the job and make a difference. There are a few things you can speak with me about that I can't add value to the discussion, Franken said. In addition to the background given him knowledge on a broad range of issues and the workings of Capitol Hill, Franken believes it makes him a very hard target for that typical run-of-the-mill, we're going to attack you, Mr. Democrat, for being fill-in-the-blank. In the Democratic primary, Franken faces former U.S. Republican Abby Ficknocker of Cedar Rapids, farmer and former county supervisor Dave Mulbauer of Manning, physician Glenn Hurst of Midden, and veterans advocate Bob Krause of Burlington. In the Republican primary, Grassley faces a challenge from Sioux City State Senator Jim Carlin. The 2022 primary election will be June 7th and the general election November 8th. The next story is Rotary Hosts Speak on Global Polio Eradication by Tim Johnson. The Council Bluffs Noon Rotary Club will sponsor a speaker on polio this week in conjunction with World Polio Day, which was Sunday. Gretchen Bren, who has been involved in the war on polio on several different levels, will speak at noon Thursday at the Haw Family Arts and Culture Center, 10016 South 6th Street, a press release from the club stated. In 1985, Rotary International launched Polio Plus, the largest internationally coordinated private sector support of a public health initiative at that time, with an initial fundraising goal of $120 million, according to the Rotary International website. In 1994, the International Commission for the Certification of Poliomyelitis Eradication announced that polio has been eliminated from the Americas. By the year 2000, a record of 550 million children, almost 10% of the world's population, had received the oral polio vaccine. Bren made her first polio immunization trip to Kaduna, Nigeria in 2008 and has been back there six times. She has also traveled to Chad twice, Mali, India, Madagascar, and Pakistan to participate in immunization projects. She was honored with the citation for meritorious service from the trustees of the Rotary Foundation in 2012, and in 2014 received the International Service Award for a polio-free world from the trustees. Bren has been the District 5650 Polio Plus Chairwoman for the past several years, and is also a district trainer and facilitator at the Rotary Zone level for district trainers. She is also the immediate past chairwoman of the Rotary Action Group for Polio Survivors. To date, there has been a 99.9% worldwide reduction in polio cases over the past three decades. Further efforts are needed to eliminate the wild polio virus from Afghanistan and Pakistan, where it is still endemic. No one wants to lose any of the progress that has already been made. Polio is a highly infectious disease that most commonly affects children younger than five. The virus is spread primarily through contaminated water. It can attack the nervous system and in some instances lead to paralysis. Although there is no cure, there is a safe and effective vaccine which Rotary and its partners have used to immunize more than 2.5 billion children worldwide. Concerns remain that the disease could rebound if not completely eliminated. Unless polio is eradicated within 10 years, as many as 200,000 new cases could develop around the world each year, according to Rotary International. Although only two countries have reported polio cases caused by the wild virus in the past few years, leaders fear no child is safe until they have all been vaccinated. The Council Blocks News Centennial Rotary Clubs have supported eradication effort every year. The Council Bluffs Noon and Centennial Rotary Clubs have supported the eradication effort. Every year, members are asked to make an annual contribution to the Polio Plus campaign. In October, the Noon's Rotary programming focuses on polio and why is it important to continue the campaign. Anyone interested in hearing Bren's presentation may contact Club Administrator Sandra Tripp at cbrotaryclub@gmail.com or send a note to the Council Bluffs Rotary Club at P.O. Box 673 Council Bluffs, Iowa 51502. Our next story is Hogg more active on social media than fellow legislators. Software firm says Cedar Rapids Democrat is the most prolific. By James Q. Lynch. Cedar Rapids. If he had known someone was keeping score, State Senator Rob Hogg says he might have tried harder. Still, the Cedar Rapids Democrat wasn't surprised to learn that he's the most active Iowa legislator on Twitter and Facebook, according to Quorum, a Washington-based public affairs software company that tracked the social media posting of lawmakers in 50 states since the beginning of the year. Hogg, who was elected in the Iowa House in 2002, and the Senate in 2006, has posted to his Twitter and Facebook accounts 3,994 times between January 1st and August 25th, Quorum says. That sounds about right, Hogg said. He finds social media a useful tool for communicating with not only his Southeast Cedar Rapids constituents, but Iowans in general. Hogg doesn't post as often about legislation as he does about the coronavirus pandemic, the destruction of existing prairie land near his Otis Road home for the rail car storage yard, and more recently, about the upcoming United Nations Climate Change Conference beginning Thursday. Social media, I think, can be useful, said Hogg, who is not seeking re-election in 2022. The trick is for people not to get dragged down in it and forget about other things. He gets frequent retweets and responses from his sometimes lengthy threads on COVID-19, daily numbers for deaths, hospitalizations, and vaccinations. The feedback ranges from those who disagree or deny COVID-19 realities to people who raise a factual issue or something that requires me to look more deeply. If somebody just says, you're an idiot, well, that's not very helpful, Hogg said. But if somebody says, oh, I think you're ignoring this fact, then you know that's interesting and I make sure to go check it out. One thing he has been doing frequently this year is sharing links to news media reporting on COVID-19. I think one of the problems is social media can be helpful, but it's no substitute for what regular journalists do, He explained, adding that it concerns him that some people use social media to circumvent the news media. Although Hogg has been recognized as the most active Iowa legislator on social media, he isn't as prolific as some colleagues in other states. His 1,444 Facebook posts this year compares with 3,336 posts by Florida Democrat State Senator Linda Stewart. And Hogg's 2,550 posts on Twitter don't come close to Arizona Republican State Senator David Livingston, 20,928 tweets, 89 a day. Hogg isn't looking to trend as much as share information he thinks is relevant. Still, he added, it's an honor to be number one in something. The next story is State Offers Guidance on COVID Boosters by Aaron Murphy. Des Moines. With booster shots for all three COVID-19 vaccines all approved by federal regulators, the State Public Health Department has issued guidance for Iowans who want to receive one of the boosters. What's new? The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has now approved booster doses for all three COVID-19 vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. All are now available for distribution for individuals who qualify to receive them. What they are. As with many other vaccines, data shows that COVID-19 vaccines may lose some effectiveness over time. In the specific case of COVID-19, the original vaccines may not be as effective against the Delta variant, which is now the virus-dominant strain. Booster shots are designed to extend the protection offered by COVID-19 vaccines. Who is eligible? According to federal and state public health guidance, among those who receive a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, the following populations are eligible to receive a booster shot 6 months after their initial vaccine was completed. People 65 years and older, people 18 and older who live in long-term care facilities, people 18 and older with underlying medical conditions, people 18 and older who live or work in high-risk settings. Anyone 18 years and older who received the single-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine are eligible for a booster shot 2 months after receiving their initial shot. Mix and match. The Federal Food and Drug Administration has approved the mixing and matching of COVID-19 vaccines and boosters. In other words, an individual who received the initial Moderna vaccine may receive the Pfizer booster shot, or an individual who received the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine can get a Pfizer or Moderna booster. Questions. The State Public Health Department recommends that any Iowan with questions about the COVID-19 vaccine or booster shots ask their healthcare provider. Iowans can search for a vaccine provider online, vaccinateiowa.gov. The next story is Iowa Schools Struggle to Hire Enough Substitute Teachers by Abby Koch. Mason City. School districts statewide are facing issues with hiring substitute teachers, which causes problems when they need a person to cover a classroom. I was on a conference call last Wednesday with other districts our size and larger, and it is a struggle statewide to find substitutes right now, said Tom Drimiskimski, Human Resources Director for the Mason City School District. Drimiskimski said that the Mason City School District was able to find substitutes last year, but this year has become a more noticeable issue. He noted that the district has had half the number of substitutes that they need. It was the beginning of August that we opened applications again for substitutes, and there just weren't that many, Drimiskimski told the Mason City Globe-Gazette. Clear Lake Superintendent Doug Gee said his district is facing the same issue as Mason City with a short age of subs. Gee says that substitute teacher shortages have been an issue for a few years, but the pandemic escalated the problem. This year is even worse than last year, said Gee. Charles City Communications Director Justin DeVore said his district saw the growing problem of finding substitutes last year. We were starting to see in last year when teachers last year who had been subbing for a long time, we really started to see a major effect in the midst of the pandemic, said DeVore. Drimiskimski pointed out the issue of finding substitute teachers is very similar to the hiring issues of other industries like manufacturing and hospitality. Our difficulty in finding substitutes is not unlike the circumstances that all employers are in right now, said German Ziski. You look at the hospitality industry, retail, construction, and across the entire economy, there's a lack of applicants for open positions. Both Mason City and Clear Lake schools have repeatedly posted their substitute teacher position to try to receive a few applicants. We continually post for it, and we do background checks and get them subbing as soon as possible, said Guy. We're running an ad again this weekend that we need substitute teachers and paraprofessionals. We are also considering advertising that more during conferences next month to let parents know that these opportunities are available, said German Zinski. G says the teacher shortages and fewer retired teachers returning to sub are contributing to the number of substitute teachers they have. He added at one time, the teachers who were unable to find teaching position within a district typically look up substitute teacher positions. Now, since there are less teachers in the field, there are less applications coming in. I just think there are fewer of them, and there are less retired teachers that want to come back to the sub, said G. CLA and Hampton DeMont Superintendent Todd Leto, who is also experiencing shortages in his districts, also attributed the substitute teacher shortage to teachers' shortages. When there were a lot of teachers out there, we could advertise for a teaching position and then we would get 100 applicants, said Leto. Drenson Simski explained one pathway to become a substitute teacher was a license that requires an individual with their Bachelor of Arts and taking a state-required class. Along with these requirements, a person has to pass a background check and not be on the abuse registry. Next, we have a few stories on the Capitol Digest, a roundup of legislative and Capitol news items of interest. First, we have Deer on the Move. Officials with the State Department of Natural Resources are advising Iowa drivers to stay alert as they travel Iowa's roadsides over the coming weeks due to increased deer movement during the crop harvesting time that increase the risk of vehicle deer collisions. With crop harvest in full swing, DNR experts say deer seek cover in brushy creeks and trees or fence lines which often intersect with roads. Also, this is the season for deer breeding, which leads to fast-moving, unpredictable deer crossing highways. A third factor will be the change away from daylight saving time to November 7th, placing more Iowans behind the wheel during the deer-heavy dawn and dusk periods, state officials note. DNR Forest Wildlife Research biologists advise drivers to reduce speed, increase following distance from other cars, and to sweep eye movements from ditch to ditch, especially during those low-light periods and when approaching brushy or tree-lined funnels near roads. Drivers are also encouraged not to veer for deer, as leaving the lane of traffic could cause a collision with another vehicle or a utility pole or culvert. Next, we have Gambler's Return, but the coronavirus pandemic isn't over, but Iowans are returning to casinos according to the most recent numbers from Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. Since reopening in June 2020, casinos have seen an increase in visitors, but the number of people through the doors have not returned to pre-pandemic levels. The 4,632,331 patrons from July through September was the highest in casino admissions since the April through May quarter of this fiscal year. Although lower casino admissions in the fiscal 2021 and the first quarter of the fiscal 2022 likely reflect to the ongoing impact of the pandemic, casino admissions have been declining for a number of years. The Legislative Services Agency said it's not possible to determine whether admissions will continue to rebound or whether a new normal can be expected. Admissions this September were 13.7% below the average admission for all months since January 2010. Adjusted gross receipts, the total amount wagered list, winnings paid decreased from $460.7 million in the final quarter of fiscal 2021 to $442.3 million in the most recent three-month quarter. While September 2021 saw a slight decrease in receipts at $139.7 million, it was a 17.4% above average for all months since January 2010. The next article is Second Generation Savers. The College Savings Iowa 529 plan that offers families a tax-advantaged way to save and pay for education has reached $6.3 billion in assets with 276,000 active accounts. Past and present participants have withdrawn more than $3.6 billion to pay for education expenses. Iowa Treasurer Michael Fitzgerald, who's held the job since 1983, started the program 23 years ago. Iowans who grew up with their loved ones saving for them with college savings, Iowa accounts are now opening accounts for their children, Fitzgerald said. If an Iowa taxpayer is a College Savings Iowa participant, they can deduct up to $3,474 per beneficiary from 2021 state taxable income. Fees have decreased as the plan has grown, Fitzgerald said, noting savers are benefiting from the plan's lowest annual asset base fee of 0.19%, which means investors only pay $1.90 for every $1,000 saved in their accounts. For more information, visit collegesavingsiowa.com or call 888-672-9116. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for October 26th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicap in Des Moines. I'm Sam Saratella-Smith from Jake University. IRIS volunteers love hearing from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. Now we will be moving on to the opinions articles, starting with U.S. Courting a Cold War with China by Melvin A. Goodman. Why is the United States, its president, its politicians, its pundits, hell-bent on creating a Cold War environment and arms race with China? CIA Director William Burns has created a new center with sole function on collecting intelligence on China and countering that country's espionage against the United States. And President Joe Biden, who has assembled a hardline national security team on China, has continued the bombastic policies of Donald Trump, leaving tariffs in place over the opposition of American business leaders. There are bipartisan majorities in the Congress supporting increased defense spending and modernization of nuclear weapons, even though the size of the U.S. military is already disproportionate to the Chinese threat. And in a further effort to counter China, the president also entered a deal to provide nuclear submarine technology to Australia, even though the United States hasn't provided such technology to any nation since the late 1950s, and the Australian treaty violates the spirit of the Non-Proliferation Treaty of the late 1960s. China's response to the surprising submarine deal was quick and forceful. Last week, nearly 150 Chinese warplanes were flown into Taiwan's air defense identification zone, placing military tensions between China and Taiwan at their worst level in four decades. China's president Xi Jinping didn't mention the flights in his speech commemorating the 1911 revolution that overthrew China's last imperial dynasty, but he did vow to achieve a peaceful unification with Taiwan. Meanwhile, the Department of Defense prepares for confrontation with China and issues worst-case assessments of Beijing. The recent war scare in China required several calls from former Secretary of Defense Mark Esper and Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley, as well as the postponing of a naval exercise in the South China Sea to calm waters. An underwater collision involving a U.S. nuclear attack submarine in the South China Sea last week should serve as a wake-up call to the policy and political communities mired in groupthink on China. Chinese foreign policy experts have compared the dispute in the South China Sea to the Cuban Missile Crisis. We hear nothing from the department and agencies of government that could address the issue of China more realistically with measures to enhance bilateral relations and the temper of the public atmospherics. The Commerce Department should be focused on economic security and civilian technology to counter the Pentagon's emphasis on military security and technology. According to a recent Politico article, the Commerce Department's Bureau of Industry and Security, central to technology trade with China, suffers from a lack of strategic direction and insufficient resources. There's no discussion of returning to the Washington-inspired Trans-Pacific Partnership, a regional trading association best suited to competing with China and East Asia. The Department of State remains understaffed, and there's no hint of arms control measures that could address tensions in the U.S.-China relations. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has surrendered his role in bilateral diplomacy to National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, the administration's public voice on relations with Beijing. There's an ample basis for a significant strategic dialogue between the United States and China. They share many concerns in East Asia, particularly regarding North Korea's missile program. The key to establishing an effective dialogue with China could be arms control, but the Department of Defense recently removed its Assistant Secretary of Defense for Arms Control and Disarmament. The two powers need rules of the road for navigating the South China Sea. The United States could limit its aircraft carrier deployments, China could limit its anti-ship forces, and both sides need to stop the China-bashing-slash-America-bashing syndromes that have worsened over the course of the pandemic. The agency of government that we sorely need is the one that President Bill Clinton eliminated 25 years ago, the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. The U.S. strategic position is still unassailable, even in East Asia, with military superiority in various domains. China lacks strategic allies. The United States has important relations with Australia, Japan, India, South Korea, and various Southeast Asian states, a grouping that resembles an anti-China partnership. China is making no effort to project power into regions outside of its neighborhood. The United States has hundreds of facilities and bases the world over. President Biden needs to end the militarized approach to Asia and institutionalize a serious bilateral dialogue. Alvin A. Goodman is a senior fellow at the Center of International Policy and a former CIA intelligence analyst from 1966 to 1990. And now we'll read through the obituaries. Teresa Marie Elvins. Teresa Marie Elvins, age 60 years. Teresa was born July 11, 1957. To Fred and Mildred Hogue in Council Bluffs. She passed away October 25, 2021 in Council Bluffs. Teresa was a lifelong resident of Council Bluffs and worked for the school district for many years. She is survived by her husband, Leon Elvins, second, children Leon Sue Elvins, third, Corna Marie Darrell Moss, Jessica Ann Elvins, Catherine Michelle Chad Robinson, grandchildren Skyly and Max Robinson, Molly Elvins, Nicholas Moss, great-granddaughter Emira Elvins, sisters Peggy, Barb, and Mona, other loving family and friends. Services Thursday 11 a.m. at the Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Bayless Park Chapel. Interment Garner Township Cemetery. Visitation Wednesday 5 to 6 p.m. at the Bayless Park Chapel. Kenneth Raymond Charon. Kenneth Raymond Charon, 63 years old, born January 4, 1958, and lived in Omaha, Nebraska, has passed away October 10, 2021. He was loved and cherished by many and will surely be missed. He was a teacher of patience, compassion, acts of good will, and hard work. He was a passionate HAM radio technician and weather enthusiast. Those closest to him know about his incredible ability to be ornery and a master of pranks and jokes. Kenneth is survived by Father Marianne Charon, Mother Charlene Charon, Brother Luke Charon, sisters Cindy Charon, Jacobson and Vicky Johnson, sons Zach Charon and Matt Charon, and three grandchildren. I know there is a lot of people who cared for him and were cared for by him. If you wish to attend the small service we are having for him, please get a hold of his sons or siblings. private interment at Forest Lawn Cemetery. Myron Gill. Myron Gill, age 60, passed away October 23, 2021. He was born April 14, 1961, to Gaylord and Mary Stoggedill. Myron Gill, age 60, passed away October 23, 2021. He was born April 14, 1961, to Gaylord and Mary Stoggedill Gill in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Myron was preceded in death by his father, Gaylord Gill, daughter Myra Jo Gill, brother Monty Gill. Myron is survived by his wife, Jolynn Gill, mother, Mary Gill, children, Randy, Corey, Pohl, Melissa Gill, Monica Gill, Jessica Mayo, Bradley Richardson, Chrissy Carpenter, Mary Cash, Brandy Milos, Molly Gill, siblings Mark K. Gill, Matt Barb Gill, Melanie Shane Clapp, Morgan Janie Gill, Aunt Geraldine Gill, 22 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. at Hoy Kilnowski Funeral Home on Thursday, October 28, 2021. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. at Hoy Kilnowski Funeral Home on Friday, October 29, 2021. Interment is in Cedar Lawn Cemetery. The family will direct memorials. Connie Lee Lehan Haggood. Connie Lee Lehan Haggood was born on January 22, 1947, and was raised by her parents Violet Bliss and Melvin Trotter in Coffeyville, Kansas. She had several siblings whom she loved dearly, with her brothers Bill Haggood, Paul Haggood Jr., and Russell Shelton being the closest to her growing up in the same house. Although primarily known as a very loving sister, she had a tough side to her, which she attributed to growing up as the sole girl in the house. Many times she mentioned how her brothers treated her like one of the boys, which she included a time where she broke her arm while playing backyard football with her brothers. Whether she cried or not was debated over the years. In 1965, Connie graduated from Field Kinley High School in Coffeyville. To this day, she remained in contact with many of her classmates, of whom she had shared many wonderful memories. Connie went on to receive her associate's degree in business from Coffeyville Community College, where she also a cheerleader for the Red Ravens Junior College football team. Connie later moved up to the Council Bluffs, Iowa with her family and began working at Mutual of Omaha. During this time, Connie met a pharmacist, Joseph Joe Lehan, and conjugated at the courtship ensued. She said that the minute she had met Joe that she knew he was the one and would go out of her way to visit the pharmacy just to see him. On one of those visits, she left her contact information with an employee at Condrug, and Joe, after almost losing it, reached out to her for their first date, and then shortly after, their loving relationship began. On February 9, 1968, at Queen of Apostles Parish in Council Bluffs, Joe and Connie were married, and the union led to the birth of 4 sons, Todd, Mark, Troy, and Matthew. Joe and Connie moved to Minden, Iowa, where proud owners of Lehan Pharmacy in Minden, where Joe served as the town pharmacist for over 40 years. In addition to the pharmacy and being a loving mother and grandmother, Connie worked in the Pottawamie County Auditor's Office for over 10 years, and her interests in politics led her to being elected to the Pottawamie County Board of Supervisors, where she served on the board from 1994 to 1998. As a mother and grandmother, Connie was full of pride as her family brought her tremendous amounts of joy and love. She was so supportive and always wanted to be there, and in times when she could not, she always found a way to let you know there for you. Raising kids in the 70s through 90s, she was a character, like her mother Violet, and was known for many sayings around the house, some which brought us laughter later in life, like, "You better have that room cleaned up by the time I come back," or "Stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about." But the ones that we'll always remember are the ones she said the most, including, "Come here and give me a hug," and of course her favorite, "I love you so much," which was how she finished almost every conversation. Her loving nature was a rarity and will dearly be missed. Connie died at home on Tuesday, October 19th, 2021, having attained the age of 74 years, 8 months, and 28 days. She's preceded in death by her parents' loving husband, Joe, married 49 years, and siblings Paul Haggard Jr., Bill Haggard, and Russell Shelton. She is survived by sons Todd Lehan of Minden, Iowa, Mark Lehan and his wife Elizabeth of Papillion, Nebraska, Troy Lehan of Omaha, Nebraska, Matthew Lehan and his wife Margarita Orsuko of Madison, Wisconsin, grandchildren Kirsten, Brooklyn, Derek, Luke, Lattery, and Mabry, siblings Brenda Trotter, Jill Trotter, and Bill Trotter, many nieces and nephews. Connie was an avid animal lover, ensuring the household had a family dog for most years, as well as having a love for the wildlife around the house. To honor her memory, the family requests that in the Leo of Flowers and all memorials be directed to the Midlands Humane Society in Council Bluffs, Iowa. The family would also like to thank everyone for their kind words and shared memories. So many of you have impacted her life and should know that Connie loved you. A public visitation with Family Presents will be held on Tuesday, October 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Polly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca, with a rosary being held at 7 p.m. Polly Jones Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Robert L. Edmonds. Robert L. Edmonds, age 83, of Council Bluffs, passed away October 23, 2021, at his home. Robert was born June 21, 1938. Prayer service Friday, 10:30 a.m. at Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Bayless Park Chapel. Interment will follow in Cedar Lawn Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to St. Albert Schools. Homer D. Logrier. Homer D. Logrier, age 90, of Council Bluffs, passed away October 20th, 2021, at Risen Sun Nursing Home. Homer was born March 3rd, 1931, in Bedford, Iowa, to the late Swan and Charlotte Ann Clark Lottery. He proudly served his country in the U.S. Navy. Homer married Dorothy Jean Lauver on March 16, 1957, in Council Bluffs. From 1961 to 1977, Homer was a millwright in the Omaha area. From 1977 to 1988, Homer was the business agent for Millwrights Union Local Number 1463 and retired from there in 1988. In addition to his parents, Homer was preceded in death by his wife Dorothy in 2007. Homer is survived by his daughter Lori David Starr of Council Bluffs, grandson Scott Starr of Ames, Iowa, Aaron Starr of Council Bluffs, twin half-sisters Eva Carson and Reva Patton, nieces and nephews. Graveside service and burial Friday 1 p.m. at Garner Township Cemetery. Military rites will be tendered by the Canesville Honor Guard. Margaret A. and Robert M. Darnell. Margaret A. Darnell, age 91, and Robert M. Darnell, age 94, both of Council Bluffs, passed away within minutes of each other from failing health October 23, 2021. Margaret was born December 2, 1929, in Omaha, Nebraska, to the late George and Mary Coyle Petit. Bob was born May 30, 1927, in Council Bluffs, to the late Stanley and Ruby Deal Darnell. Bob served his country in the U.S. Navy during World War II and worked for the Union Pacific Railroad for over 32 years as a brakeman. Margaret worked for many years at Bishop Clarkson Hospital and was a claims representative. They were united in marriage on October 8, 1948, and to this union, four children were born: Linda, Mike, Denise, and Pat. Margaret and Bob were longtime members of Corpus Christi Queen Apostles Church. Margaret preceded in death by her parents, brother Bob, Helen Petit, son-in-law Rich Sullivan Jr., great-granddaughter Maddie. Bob is preceded by his parents, brother Fred Marjorie Darnell, sisters Mary Colville and Betty Belloc. Bob and Margaret are survived by their children, Linda Jim Dyson of Waverly, Nebraska, Mike Patty Darnell, Dee Sullivan, Denise Sullivan, Pat Penny Darnell, all of the Council Bluffs, 11 grandchildren, 21 great-grandchildren, Margaret's brother William Sr., Joan Petit, many nieces and nephews. Rosary recitation Wednesday 6 p.m. followed by visitation until 8 p.m. at Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Bayless Park Chapel. Mass of Christian burial for Margaret and Bob will be Thursday 10:30 a.m. at Corpus Christi Queen of Apostles Church. Luncheon will follow the Mass. Private interment at St. Mary's Cemetery in Omaha later that day. Military rites will administered at St. Mary's Cemetery. Family will direct memorials. Jerome Jerry Slowey. Jerome Jerry Slowey, son of George Clarence and Helen Florence Buckley Slowey, was born on February 1, 1939, at home on the family farm in Yankton County, SD, and side, October. Jerome Jerry Slowey, son of George Clarence and Helen Florence Buckley Slowey, was born on February 1, 1939, at home on the family farm in Yankton County, South Dakota, and died October 18, 2021, after a long and valiant fight against stage 4 prostate cancer and Parkinson's disease at age 82. Jerry grew up on a farm near Irene, South Dakota, and attended primary school in one-room schoolhouse named for his family, Slowey School. He graduated from Irene High School in 1956 and went on to attend St. Vincent's School of X-ray Technology in Sioux City, Iowa, graduating in 1958. After working a few years at Lutheran Hospital in Sioux City, Jerry was drafted into the U.S. Army October 19, 1961. He served 2 years at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, and was discharged with awards for good conduct on October 19, 1963. After studying at Morningside College in Sioux City for 2 years, he transferred to the University of South Dakota at Vermillion, where he earned a B.S. in Biology and later an M.S. in Science Education. Jerry married Diane L. Corley on October 19, 1968. Daughter Teresa was born on 1969, and son Timothy was born in 1971. Jerry began his career as a high school science teacher, later served as a high school principal at Jefferson, South Dakota until 1979. Jerry then moved to Charter Oak and later Denison, Iowa, where he taught high school biology, chemistry, physics, and general science for 15 years at Charter Oak UT High School. Then, 1989, Jerry and Diane moved to Kansas City, Missouri, where he became the program director for health, and in 1989, Jerry and Diane moved to Kansas City, Missouri, where he became the program director for the Health and Science Magnet High School for Kansas City, Missouri Public School System. Missing his time in the classroom, Jerry left school administration to return to teaching high school science at St. Pius X Catholic High School in Kansas City, Missouri for 20 years before retiring in 2013. Jerry's career as a high school administrator and science teacher proudly spanned over 40 years. Survivors include his wife Diane Slowey, two children Teresa Greg Whitman Wivers, son Tim Carroll Slowey, four grandchildren Wesley Molly Noah Mia, sister Cleo Fred Bredemaker, brother Todd Slowley, sister-in-law Jane Slowey, mother-in-law Mary Ann Corley, sisters-in-law Donna Clark, Carol Jackson, Kathy Johnstein, brother-in-law Tommy Corley, and many loved nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, sister Clarice Slowey, brothers Jim Slowey and his wife Betty, and Jack Slowey, father-in-law Rex A. Corley Sr., brothers-in-law Rex A. Corley Jr., Tom Clark and Ken Plummer, and nephew Chris Charon. Jerry Slowey was a good man and was a great husband and father. He was simple and placed no value on material things. He valued education and family. He taught others to extend kindness, peace, and acceptance to all. He lived life honestly and will be remembered as a tremendous teacher. Wake service Friday, October 29th, 2021 at 6 p.m., followed by visitation with family until 8 p.m. at Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Bayless Park Chapel. Memorial Mass Saturday, 10 a.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. An ermine in St. Joseph's Cemetery with military honors tendered by the Canesville Honor Guard. A lunch will follow at St. Patrick's Parish Hall. In lieu of flowers, please consider sending memorial contributions to America's Parkinson's Disease Association at www.apdaparkinsons.org/memorial-tribute 1907D31. Now we will move on to the sports section, starting off with Rivers Bounce Back from Loss by Peter Hoogwin. NJCAA Division 1, number 8, Iowa Western Volleyball suffered a setback to start the weekend at the Jefferson College Invite on Friday, losing to number 5 Missouri State University West Plains in 4 sets, 25-16, 25-16, 14-25, and 14-22. However, the Rivers bounced back from this defeat to win 3 straight matches against Jefferson College, 25-20, 25-24, 22-25, 24-26, 15-6, Illinois Central College, 25-22, 25-12, 25-14, and District 1 number 14 Stewart Country Community College, 25-20, 26-26, 25-20, 2-25, 15-9. We got shocked by the West Plains and mentally had to recover from throughout the rest of the weekend, head coach Alicia Williams said. Sherilyn Antonio has moved over the outside and has really helped our offense, but we had to work through some rotational differences with that move. I think we will have time to execute the change, but we were sloppy this weekend. Sherilyn Antonio led IWCC with 66 kills during the tournament. Mikey Burdens added 49 and Dayan Malev finished with 48. Malev also blocked 21 shots. Yadira Ashante dished out 196 assists and served a team-high 4 aces. Iowa Western served 22 aces as a squad. Daru Oskan paced the Rivers in digs with 82. IWCC is now 27-3 on season. Iowa Western is in action next at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at home against Marshalltown in the regular season finale. Next, we have Postseason Sports in Full Swing by Peter Hoogwin. The postseason is in full swing for most high school sports. Class 5A, 4A, and 3A football start the first round of the playoffs on Friday at Class 2A, 1A, A, and 8-person start the second round. Class 4A, number 6, Lewis Central, opens the playoffs at 7 p.m. on Friday at home against Spencer. Class 1A, number 2, Underwood, will host Holy Week Christian at same time. Volleyball teams are competing in the semifinal and finals of the regional tournament this weekend with a spot at the state tournament on the line. Abraham Lincoln, Lewis Central, Trenor, and Tri-Center are still alive as of Monday night. The state cross-country championship will take place on Friday and Saturday. St. Albert qualified both its boys and girls team, as did Glenwood. Lewis Central's Ethan Eckhorn, Heartland Christian's Grace Steinmeitz, and Nicholas Milliner, Underwood's Bryce Patton, Tri-Center's Quincy Skelnklock, and Sheen McGee have Riverside Braina Smith and Mason McCready as HHSTWs. Riley Knott all qualified for the meet. Council Bluffs swimming with competing at the Missouri River Athletic Conference meet at 5:30 p.m. on Thursday at CO City West. Iowa Western Community College men's and women's soccer teams have also started the postseason. The women will play at 1 p.m. on Thursday and at home against Iowa Central in the regional semifinals. The men will play 2 p.m. on Thursday at home against Indian Hills in the regional semifinals. The IWCC Crosses Country team is also in action at 4 p.m. on Friday in the regional championships in Waterloo. Look online at nonparallelonline.com and the print edition for this week for stories on these games and more. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonparallel for October 26. The Nonparallel can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. Iris volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about today's broadcast or any Iris program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. I'm Sam Saratella-Smith from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.
Some would call 88-year-old Sally Jackson a lucky senior.
A few years ago, a family member offered to move in and care for Sally so that she wouldn't have to leave the comfort of her own home.
But soon after, one of Sally's neighbors, Carol, paid a visit, unannounced.
Something wasn't quite right.
Sally's demeanor and physical appearance had changed.
Luckily, Carol was aware of warning signs that might signal elder abuse.
Such as bruises, poor hygiene,
isolation, depression,
appearing withdrawn or unusually quiet, as if to hide something.
When victimized, elderly people often feel ashamed, confused.
But an alert neighbor helped Sally.
Not all abused seniors are as lucky as Sally Jackson.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to help you and your loved ones prevent elder abuse. Know what to look for. Know how to report it to local law enforcement agencies.
To learn more, go to ncpc.org/seniors. That's ncpc.org/seniors. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.